This episode is brought to you by Ibotta. Finally taking that summer vacation you've been planning but dreading buying all the necessities before you take off. That can be very daunting, especially when you're buying 40 different little items all at different stores, all that seem to be increasingly expensive. It's time to stop spending your hard-earned money without getting anything in return. Enter Ibotta. Ibotta gives you cash back on hundreds of grocery items from produce to personal care to pantry goods so you can make sure you're beating inflation no matter what you're purchasing. Either link your loyalty account or upload your receipt after you shop and get your cash back. It's just that easy. The average Ibotta user earns $120 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip. Or you could use your cash back to buy that flight you've been eyeing, that game you're dying to go to, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Maybe you could even buy tickets to Messi's first game. I'm sure that they won't be super expensive at all. You just go ahead and use those Ibotta savings to make that happen. Other apps give you points that don't amount to much. With Ibotta, you get real cash back that you can cash out to your bank account, PayPal, or gift cards. You can earn cash back on hundreds of online brands and retailers, too, when you start with Ibotta, including Lowe's. For all of you homeowners out there, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 just for trying Ibotta by using the code TSS when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app and use code TSS. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use code TSS.
To the Total Soccer Show's weekend review. Sorry if you're a Spurs fan, but it has to be said, for the time being, North London is red. By halftime, it looked like Arsenal were out of sight, but in the end, the result was uncomfortably tight. Man City kept the pressure on with Erling Haaland joining the party, and Nottingham Forest had no tweets about the Luton VAR Illuminati. And it was bad news if you're a Jurgen Klopp simper, as Liverpool are finishing with a bit of a whimper. West Ham were the latest team to dash the Reds' dream, while Mo Salah got really angry instead of scoring for his team. Elsewhere, Leicester came up and Sheffield United were put to the sword. Juventus and Milan played a game that left us bored. PSG won the league and set themselves apart. And Leo Messi scored 2 goals in a place that's wicked smart. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, someone who might have a slightly better Boston accent than me, Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor Rockwell.
Smuggle and Begla, that's what I got for you. That's Jason Mantzoukas's touchstones for the Boston accent. I still can't do it very well. Ryan, that was an incredible introduction. You've pretty much reviewed the weekend. Are we done? Can we go? Is that it?
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a good show. Thank you very much. We're off. Bye. Yeah,
that really was excellent. You ran through it all, man. It was quite the weekend. I think this is going to be a heavily Premier League-centric weekend because there were results elsewhere, but it also kind of feels like the Premier League is the most interesting league right now with how open things are to an extent.
I think that is a fair assessment of the situation we have right now, Taylor. Lots of Premier League to talk about this weekend, but only two of us to do so.
Yeah.
So we've gone from awesome foursome to power trio to gruesome twosome? Is that what we're going to call this? Yeah, let's do that.
Not dynamic duo. Definitely not.
Not
gruesome
indeed.
Twosome.
Joe Lowry out at some nuptials at the moment, and Graham Ruthven still living the Orlando dream. You can see much of that Orlando dream, by the way, patreon.com/totalsoccershow. If you watch some of Graham's bonus videos he's been putting up, he went to an Orlando City game this weekend, Taylor, and also he went to a soccer shop where I think he was happier than he was at the soccer game.
Yes, 100%. And I'm amazed that they were able to get him out of that soccer shop based on the number of kits available and how happy he was. I watched a lot of soccer this weekend in fairly varying levels of detail. But I will say one thing I watched in minute detail was a clip I saw on Reddit of somebody showing the line at Disney. It turned out to be Disneyland. I realized that way too late. But of people waiting in line for popcorn. I don't know if the Disney popcorn buckets are something special, but it seemed to be a mile-long line, and before I realized that it was the one in California, I really did, like, pause it to go through and be like, please be Graham, please be Graham. I really wanted there to be a Graham Ruthven random sighting in the popcorn line. Alas, he was in Florida instead of California, so time well spent by me.
I bet Graham would have had like the express line pass to get the popcorn.
Of course. And then still been annoyed by the payment system, whatever it was. Even if it were fluid and made sense, he would still have thoughts.
Oh, Graham and his dislike of having to pay sign for things when you buy things in the United States. Bless his heart. All right, plenty to get on to this show, Tay-Tay. Let's say we get to it with the Premier League, with the, let's call it the box office game of the weekend, the North London Derby. 5 goals there were in this one. Tottenham getting 2 of them, Arsenal getting 3 of them. So this was an interesting, a game of two halves, I guess we can call this.
And a
curious one, because the team that were 3-0 down in the first half, I didn't think were terrible. I think they actually played quite well, arguably played better in the first half than the second. We can talk about that a bit later on, but maybe we should probably start with Arsenal, who won the game. 2 goals from corners, 1 on the break from Bukayo Saka in the first half. Yeah. Give that set piece coach a nice raise, by the way. He's been doing some stellar work this year. And then Romero taking advantage of a David Raya clanger and Hoyman's son to bring it back to a competitive game later in the second half. What do you want to start with this one, Taylor? Probably Arsenal, you know, set-piece kings at the moment, and they did let this one get a little bit close for comfort in the second half.
Absolutely, in a way that I, too, was not expecting at all. And the fact that this was a nail-biter for the final few minutes, Son's penalty is, what, like the 87th minute? So with time added on, it did feel like for a moment there was a possibility this could finish in a draw. And I think the commentators were setting that up pretty well with the, like, this would be the biggest slip since Liverpool. Oh, if they don't manage to win this one, it would be catastrophic. I think Arsenal fans must have been loving the close of this game. They were certainly enjoying the opening of this game. And as you said, Ryan, we've talked a lot on this show, Joe, especially about the importance of set pieces for Arsenal, how good they have been and how critical they have been to their success. And also, I think in their downturn in form, or relative downturn in form, you've seen a lack of execution on set pieces. Here, I thought they were really interesting, and I don't recall them doing this sort of everyone starts at the back post and then sort of blitzes to the front as the corner's being taken. Maybe that's a thing they've been doing, but at least against Tottenham's zone, it was incredibly effective. They basically get 2 goals from doing that exact approach. It's the Havertz goal in the 38th is the second one, and then it's the Højbjerg own goal, but it's the same thing. It's basically he comes under pressure because suddenly he goes from having no one around him to having 4 Arsenal players around him, and I think there's a bit of a panic. It worked really well, and I think did show that against Spurs' zone, it allows Arsenal players to have that momentum to attack that space just more aggressively than Spurs could. And I didn't see a way back into this for Tottenham, especially because when they were sort of expansive and open and trying to make things happen, they maybe thought they were going to get a penalty, but what they did get instead was Saka's goal. And so it felt like Arsenal were executing set pieces, doing a really good job of playing on the break and punishing Spurs on the break. So for Tottenham to get back into this one was not a thing I saw coming, and I think the only person who maybe did was Romero, who was excellent in this game and was all over the place. Christian Romero's heat map is basically the entire pitch. Like, he was all over the place. And for his goal, it's a David Raya howler, for sure. It passes it right to him. But
what was he trying to do there, by the way? Can you see who he's even aiming for?
No, I cannot. There were a few of these this weekend where it like Jimmy Conrad did a video, I think late last week, about like, I need this trend of trying to play out through the goalkeeper to be over. And I don't go that far with it, but there are moments, Ryan's applauding. There are moments where it does look, it is weird how much calamity has become a thing that we expect to be part of the game. Because years ago, if you had a goalkeeper pass to a fullback and then he passed back to the goalkeeper and he was under pressure and he like played it through the middle to somebody that maybe came off, it would feel like, oh, they are flying by to the seat of their pants. This is not the way they drew it up. And the idea that this is now how they drew it up and what they're deliberately trying to do is very strange and leads to moments like David Raya passing it straight to Christian Romero, who then, credit to him, finishes well. That is a striker's finish from like 18 yards out. But Match of the Day did a really good job of spotlighting this, that Romero drives forward with the ball leading up to this goal. He plays, he's looking for like a direct through ball in behind, and I think it gets cut out or comes off of Gabriel. And then Romero continues forward. He sprints forward another 30 yards to continue the press. And maybe it's just that Raya doesn't expect him to be there. Maybe he thinks that there's another option that will receive that pass, but there isn't. And it's a credit to Romero for getting that goal, for being really himself dangerous on set pieces. He hits the woodwork once, he comes close another time. I really think he was the spark, the catalyst that kind of pulled Tottenham back into this game where it felt like they were very much out of it.
Yeah, and on the set piece coaching, by the way, Taylor, I wonder if the set piece coach for Arsenal told Ben White what to do. I don't know if you saw the clip from Men in Blazers put it on Instagram. I missed this during the initial broadcast, but he pinches Vicario's glove or like grabs him, puts him off completely.
I think he's trying to pull the Velcro off. He's trying to pull the Velcro to undo the Velcro.
Incredible poophousery, but like it's perfect because it's not, you know, he can get away with it. And obviously it completely throws Vicario before the cross comes in.
And he doesn't, he is clearly, I don't know anything about Ben White, but I'm assuming he is an elder sibling because it is very much an I'm not touching you sort of thing of like, he doesn't really, there's no facial expression. And when he does it and then the goalkeeper, like Vicario shakes him off and looks at him, he's just like, what? I didn't do anything. What are you talking about? Like he completely gaslights. It's an amazing moment from Ben White. And it had strong, I'm not touching you, little brother runs to mom. And then big brother's just like, I don't know what he's talking about. This is, I mean, his gloves are still on. I don't know what he's possibly complaining about. He also definitely bodies Vicario off, and I think with 10% more energy, that would have been a foul against him. So Ben White, knowing the exact percentage to get away with a crime, also feels like Big Brother stuff.
Well played, Bernie Blanco, on that one. Taylor, do you buy my thesis that Tottenham were better in the first half than the second, despite the scoreline? Romero obviously hit the crossbar pretty early on. Mickey van de Ven had that goal that was ruled out by an eyelash or a butt, maybe? It was, it turned out to be.
I believe the commentator said a cheek and not the one you'd expect, yes.
But I think like Lee Dixon going in on the NBC broadcast said words to the effect of Tottenham didn't do a lot wrong there, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I kind of agreed.
I think I do. I think I don't know if they were better. I feel like they were equally okay. Just in the second half, I think they kind of pushed it a little bit more and really pushed themselves a little bit more. But I see where you're coming from because it's two set piece goals and you can be critical of conceding on set pieces and we probably should. I think it does highlight an issue with the zone, as I said, but it's also Arsenal just being very effective. But then for Arsenal's second, it comes after Spurs have two penalty shouts, one stronger than the other. The other one with James Maddison, I think the player gets ball. But it gets to him because Kulusevski gets clipped on the way into the box by, I believe, Leandro Trossard. And I think it's not given because Trossard doesn't mean to make that contact. I think it's, I guess, described as incidental. But there's definitely contact. It definitely throws off Kulusevski's run, and he eventually falls down. And so I can't tell if it's maybe the unintentional aspect of the contact combined with Kulusevski running a few more steps and then going down and maybe the referee thinking he was selling it. But either way, it's not given. And that while Spurs are complaining, Arsenal break, go wrap it on the counter, and then Saka scores on Ben Davies, who's starting because Destiny Adogie is out for the rest of the season. I think you could see some of that rust for Ben Davies, and I think you could see some efficiency from Arsenal. But I also think, to your point, Ryan, there were moments in this one where it felt like Spurs could have gotten back into it, and that really felt like the knockout blow, because as they're pushing, as they feel already aggrieved that they don't get the penalty, as that goal was correctly but harshly disallowed, for it to then be 2-0 in the blink of an eye had to make them feel like, well, that's that, except for Christian Romero, who apparently did not feel that way, as I already said.
Indeed. Taylor, can we talk about Kai Havertz for a second, if you don't mind? Barney Rene had a good article on The Guardian that went up last night. Arsenal's stealth striker channels Harry Kane to dictate Derby. I'll read a quote from it. He dropped deep and passed beautifully. He held the ball with his back to goal. He won seven headers, made four clearances, tackled, intercepted, fouled, and key passed. He seemed at times to be operating in his own clean, clear space, romping about like a medical student on a fun run, but always deceptively quick and shark-like in his movements. So he's compared him to Harry Kane in the headline, but he's used that phrase, which we've heard him use before, romping about like a medical student on a fun run, which is a certain German Bayern Munich forward who he has compared that phrase to before. To
also Thomas Harry Miller. Kane?
No, the other one. Maybe he's conflating his Bayern forwards, but he made me think maybe it is a sort of Thomas Müller-esque role that he had in this game, Kai Havertz.
I think so, and I think that's maybe also why Arsenal fans don't fully love Kai Havertz, because it's not that he is doing one thing consistently well every single time. I think he has had an excellent season and been critical for Arsenal. But a lot of the Arsenal supporters I speak to are definitely like, yeah, when we get an actual number nine, that will make the difference. When we get somebody who's actually an out-and-out striker who can be there for the whole season, that will make a difference. And I think that is understandable, but it also doesn't really give Kai Havertz the credit he is due. Never mind that he gets a goal in this game. I think he is really critical in linking up play. But also, when he drops into that midfield, Thomas Partey and Declan Rice had excellent games and can create and can be attacking, but I don't think of them as being overly attacking. And so to be able to have him alongside Martin Odegaard with Saka and Trossard wide, I think it just gives Arsenal different looks and it allows them to have numbers in the middle, but then he can still get involved in the attack. And I think Kai Havertz has been
a really, really critical player for them, and yet still like somewhat unconvincing, it seems, to Arsenal supporters. So it leaves him in an interesting spot. I feel like if they were to win the title, then things would have been very different. I don't know what will end up happening there. So if they do, if he ends up scoring all the goals as they go on to win, then maybe he is cemented as an Arsenal legend. For now, I guess it will be Barney Rone comparing him to Harry Kane is the highlight of the season for him, I'm sure.
Or a medical student on a fun run.
Or a medical student on a fun run. Yes.
So Arsenal, 1 point clear, 80 points, 1 point clear of Man City, I should say, in top spot with three games to go. They've got a home game against Bournemouth. They're going to Old Trafford. Should be okay there. And they've got Everton, who are now mathematically safe on the final day. Obviously, if they don't drop any points, they've got this in the bag. What are we thinking about that?
I am wondering if Everton will get any more points this season. I can't tell if they are a team that like are just fully, we're safe now, we don't care anymore.
Flip-flops are on, yeah.
Or if they will be like suddenly winning three games in a row. Who knows? But I think that is, we'll talk more about them in a little bit, I think. But that is one to keep an eye on. I do feel like they've got a decent run. It does feel very Manchester United to just find a way to ruin another team's season at the last possible moment when they have nothing left to play for. So it's going to be tricky. And I think with Man City this weekend, we saw a team who weren't particularly, I don't know, impressive. Like they win somewhat comfortably. I think Forest had opportunities. I'm not trying to transition us into that game yet, but it was a City game that was sort of, they found a way to win even while they weren't wholly impressive. And it does just feel like we talked about last year when we tried to predict where City would lose points. And I think we all ended up kind of thinking maybe they won't. And then they didn't. And they won all of their remaining however many games. Arsenal could be as good as they've been. I think City are just have that efficiency and that ruthlessness to maybe grind it out. So I feel like we could end up seeing it be that final day coming down to it. But I still think Arsenal find themselves in a fairly unfavorable position overall. Though it could be worse. They could be Liverpool. Shots fired there. I will say one other little note on Arsenal's performance. Declan Rice had a very interesting game. He obviously has... We need a term for this, but the penalty conceded where you go to clear the ball and then the opposition player gets there first and you don't see them, so you end up kicking the player instead of the ball. This happens like once every 6 months, and it is always a... It is a definite penalty, but it feels weird because you know what he was doing. You know that he had no intention of fouling. He just didn't get to the ball in time. But it's a strange one. And then
he did.
He got to two balls in a way. Yes, he did. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah, poor Ben Davies. It was a rough day for him. But then on the flip side, for the third goal for Arsenal, it's Declan Rice taking the corner. I think he took both. But it is him in front of Spurs supporters who are just giving it to him. There's five of them. They are leaning over. They are in his ear. They are screaming at him. They are hurling whatever abuse they can. And he doesn't react at all. He's a professional. He sets up. He takes his corner. It goes in. And he immediately turns around and in front of them is like, yeah, like just fully celebrates right in front of them. I do love those moments where players get to just vent a little bit of that frustration, because if supporters are giving it to them, they've got to be able to take it when the situation reverses. And I think all of them just sort of stood there in silence and watched him celebrate as the rest of the Arsenal team came over to celebrate. So a good game for Declan Rice, even if he does end up conceding that pen.
Yeah, 3,000 Arsenal fans, I think they said in a broadcast at the stadium as well. They made quite a bit of noise, it sounded like,
yes,
on the broadcast too. I've always wondered how fretful it could be to be an Arsenal fan. The away game and vice versa, a Tottenham fan at the Arsenal derby. Must be
I suspect it is more nerve-wracking to be a Tottenham supporter at Arsenal. I feel like most of the Arsenal supporters I know, the ones who speak negatively of Kai Havertz, will also sort of be like, yeah, it's Tottenham. They still have that vibe about Spurs in a way that not a lot of other clubs do.
I think you have your jacket fully done up until you get inside the stadium. That would be my
yeah,
advice.
That could be.
Travelling fans for that derby. Let's take a quick break, Taylor. When we come back, let's talk about Liverpool dropping points again. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our weekend review. Let's go to the London Stadium, where there was a 2-2 draw between West Ham and Liverpool. Mikel Antonio with a 77th minute equaliser, all but eliminating Taylor. Liverpool's title hopes. Oh boy.
Oh boy indeed, man. And again, speaking to a few of my friends who support Liverpool, it's strange to me how resigned they were to this. A couple of them even talked about just not feeling like watching, not feeling like there was going to be that spark. And it does seem like part of that is the Klopp departure and the feeling like we're not going to win the title. He's leaving. Let's see what comes next. And so there is like an element of hurry up and wait to it. But I think there was also for a moment a feeling of this could be the fairy tale ending. He could push them to win the Premier League one more time. He gets to walk away a champion. This team has been building towards this achievement. And now we can rebuild. And instead, it feels like they are sort of, as I said, like basically waiting for the season to end. And then on top of that, you have Klopp and Salah getting into it on the sidelines. And yeah. I'm still unclear what that was about. It doesn't seem like we're going to get a lot of clarity on it because neither party seems inclined to fully lay it out and speak to it. But it's Salah waiting to sub in late in the game. And maybe that's part of the frustration from Salah's perspective. Klopp seems to have a little word with him that maybe was aggressive. Salah responds, and it kind of escalates from there to the point where Darwin Nunez is keeping them apart, and him being the calm voice of reason is an interesting turn for this season. But it's moments like that that I think have to be especially frustrating for Liverpool supporters, to kind of see the Klopp era ending, him and Salah dusting up, and then the team not performing as well as they have at other points in this season, the goal-scoring rate drying up. It just isn't really how I expected this to end, and I'm obviously not a Liverpool supporter, but I still have, I don't know, sympathy for Liverpool supporters and appreciation for what Klopp has brought to that team and to the league. So I was hoping maybe for a little bit better ending. It doesn't seem like we're going to get it.
I'm not a Liverpool fan either as well, Taylor, but seeing Jurgen Klopp sort of grit those smiles out during these games and at the end of these games, it's hard to watch, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. And it feels like a coach who also recognizes, like, I've done what I can. I think this maybe goes to the Joe Lowry school of thinking of at this point of the season, especially with the injuries they've had and the sort of threadbare squad of sorts, or at that level threadbare. Like, he's done well, but I'm not sure there's a lot he can do really to motivate and elevate the squad. And I think that's borne out by the numbers. In the first 30 games of the season, they're averaging 2.3 goals a game. They're averaging a conversion rate of 12%. And an XG of 2.3. Last five games, that's 1.4 goals per game. The shot conversion rate is halved to 6%, but the XG is the same, which means they're just not taking their chances. They're not converting as efficiently or effectively. And I think some of that is just a long season catching up for them. Some of that is probably injuries and a lack of squad consistency. If you don't know who you're playing with, or if you don't know the exact 11 you're playing with from week to week, I think you have to build that relationship, and that can take some time, or that can lead to a disconnect in the way you're attacking. But it also just feels like it's kind of a slumping finish to the season for them, and a team that can be got at, can sort of concede goals in a way that in the past it felt like if they were up 1-0 or 2-0, hold on, because you're really going to be struggling. And now it seems like opponents feel like there is a way to get back into games, there is a way to get at them, and that's exactly what West Ham did. A West Ham team that themselves are talking about getting rid of their manager and off-season overhaul and off-season change, and what do they need to kind of get back to a level that they expected to be at. It feels like similar situations, and it's West Ham who come away probably the happier of the two on the day.
This was the least expected result for me of the weekend. A West Ham, can they still get into Europe? Like, it basically felt like they didn't have much to play for in this game, essentially. And to show that kind of fight against Liverpool, very impressive indeed.
They can, but very unlikely. Very unlikely, yeah.
I wonder, Taylor, going back to the Salah and Klopp thing, whether it was just Salah being grouchy about being dropped. Is it that simple? Hopefully it's that simple, right?
I think so. I saw some Liverpool supporters online speculating that it was like, if you watch, Klopp gives like the high five, big hug to Nunez. He gives the high five, big hug to, I think it's Gomez who's coming on at the same time. I forget who the other sub was. And then with Salah, there's just like a little bit of a high five. And there were some people even saying like, oh, Salah didn't give him the hug he wanted. And you can see the fracture there. I think it is just, yeah, he's left it late. Salah kind of feeling like there's not much he can do. And I could see a scenario in which Klopp says, you know, like, go on there and make a difference. And Salah responding, I would have loved to have done that 10 minutes ago. And it just sort of boiling up from there. I think it is just frustrations. It is probably when you are like, I'm going to keep the brother analogy going. When you're like locked in a room, like on vacation with your brother for a week, y'all might be good friends, but in like locked in one room with one person for a long time, maybe can bring out the negativity. And I think for Klopp and Salah, it feels like maybe this season has just, some of that frustration is boiling over. I suspect we won't hear a ton more about it, and I suspect it will be an okay situation in the end, but it's probably just the frustration of the moment, the frustration of the season becoming apparent.
Yeah, Liverpool in third place, 3 games left to play, 75 points, 5 points behind leaders Arsenal. Can still be gone, but seems unlikely at this point.
Right, but, if I could, I asked a few people this. I'm not sure I have clear thoughts one way or the other. Do you have thoughts on the idea that Klopp announcing he was leaving was not a positive thing? Because I thought it was like going to be a kind of like a rallying thing. He's letting them know, he gives them time to kind of plan for the summer. And instead, it felt a little bit scattershot. It doesn't seem like it's motivated the squad. And it feels, as I said, like it's kind of coming to an unsatisfactory ending. So I'm not sure I put his departure on the team, but it's still maybe a talking point worth delving into.
It can't have helped, Taylor. I don't know if you've ever worked for an organization where you know your boss is leaving in 2 weeks. Do you work your hardest during those 2 weeks? Like, psychologically, that is a difficult thing to do, I would argue, no matter what kind of top athlete you are. Somewhere in your brain, that affects you. And I think at the time, I mentioned the fact that there's lots of downside to him making that announcement at the time he did. It felt like he was doing it when Liverpool were in 4 competitions. He was doing it cynically. I think I used the word cynically at the time, that it was at sort of the peak. The only way technically was down from where he was at that point he made the announcement. And when he said things like, I'm out of energy, that's coming back to bite him a little bit at this point.
Man, I think that's a good point. It's one I hadn't really given a lot of credit to, but I think maybe just because I didn't believe it. But it's a valid point. And I do think to extend it when you're talking about like if you're in a job and your boss is leaving, if you are... It's weird to compare a job to sport, but like if you've been pulling towards completing this one huge project and everybody's trying to get there and you're all in it together and pulling together, I can see how you can put that aside, the boss is leaving aside, and just think, I'm focused on the short term, I'm focused on getting this win, I'm focused on getting this thing across the line. But even there, you are actively choosing not to think about it. So it can be a distraction, and especially when things take a turn, if it starts to feel like we're not going to hit the deadline, then it suddenly is like, well, he doesn't care, he's leaving. And I can see how it can be a negative. And I think what my mind is then drawn to is the way Leverkusen have been responding to going behind. And you've seen that fight, even as they've got things wrapped up, they keep going, they keep pushing, they keep trying to keep that perfect record or the unbeaten record alive. And I wonder if Xabi Alonso had announced, yeah, I'm leaving at the end of the season, it's been a really successful season, is there that same level of fight and spirit? I would assume not. So I think it's a valid point, Ryan. Interesting. I had not thought I would agree, but here we are.
Yes, I made a valid point.
You did.
All right, my day is complete. Well, we do have more Liverpool news. Obviously, Arne Slot, the Dutchman, coming in to replace Jurgen Klopp this summer, it appears, after Liverpool have agreed nearly a £10 million compensation with his current club, Feyenoord. I mean, Taylor, a club from the northwest of England bringing in a high-flying Dutch coach from the Eredivisie, it's not gone wrong in recent years. I think it's a great idea, right?
No, a bald one at that. It always works out. It's always a great idea. I don't know. I do think I am a little bit... biased by this, not just because it's Liverpool, but because of the way things have gone under Ten Hag at Manchester United, and the feeling of, look what he's doing in the Netherlands, look how successful he's been, he has this style, he has this philosophy, he's got young players coming through, he's doing it right, it's totally gonna work. Felt like it was totally gonna work, does not feel like it is totally working. Liverpool have been smart in their player acquisitions, I would say, even if they have been cost-effective in their player acquisitions. I think they've made good decisions. They seem to be pretty good at evaluating talent. So I would then assume that that is not the case for Manchester United until recently, and maybe still. So it does seem like they would maybe be on sounder footing, sounder foundation, but it's an unknown, and it's an unknown coming from the Netherlands, and we always kind of talk about how you can't know for sure how good an attacker is coming out of the Dutch league because it's not the best defenders. It's really tough to know with a manager like Arne Slot if you can replicate that, if that can be a thing that immediately translates. And it does, I guess, solve a problem in the sense that they know who's coming in and you don't have the uncertainty and you don't have the sort of rumors and being linked with a bunch of different names. But it does also still feel like Xabi Alonso was their main guy, even if they say or won't admit that he was. I don't see how he couldn't have been. So then you're already kind of starting off with, well, he's our second choice. And I'm sure he'll have a line of like, second choice at Liverpool is better than being first choice anywhere. But I'm still not sure that's the vibe that you're going for to begin anew.
Yeah, welcome in, silver medal guy. We look forward
yes,
to
exactly.
your reign.
Yes.
A quick jump over to the City ground where we mentioned shortly earlier on, Man City got a 2-0 win over Nottingham Forest. Guardiola and Erling Haaland returning with a goal in that one too. Edison leaving the field with what appeared to be a shoulder injury is probably a bit of a concern for Man City, who've got, what, four games left. They've got Wolves at home. They're going to Fulham. They're going to Tottenham. That's their catch-up midweek game, the Tottenham one. And then West Ham is where they finish. West Ham already effectively ending Liverpool's title credentials. Maybe they'll do the same to Man City. We're not sure at this point, but it feels, Taylor, playing like they did in this game and as they have been recently, it is very much theirs to lose, isn't it?
Very much so. Still confusing, though, this game, because City have close to 70% possession, but fewer shots, significantly fewer XG. 0.87 for City, who ended up with two goals. 1.93 for Nottingham Forest, which shows they had plenty of chances, and maybe if they had anyone else other than Chris Wood in front of goal, he might have taken those chances a little more cleanly. He has two not quite tap-ins, but not quite tap-ins that he does not tap in and does not score. Forest, I thought, were lively. I thought they caused problems for City. I thought they outfought them at times. Kyle Walker especially gets embarrassed by Anthony Elanga at one point in the second half. That sets up one of the Chris Wood misses. And there was a vibe about this from Manchester City of, like, we know we're going to win. We know we're going to find a way through. We just have to kind of keep at it and stay calm. And I'm not saying that in a critical way, even if it sounds like I am, because they did, and they will. And that is sort of, I think, how they play. They don't lose their heads. They don't get panicked. They don't seem to get overly emotional, even when they're not playing well, even when they're giving opponents a chance to get back into it. It's a similar vibe to Leverkusen. It's a similar vibe to Real Madrid of, even if they go behind, it's like, okay, well, we'll get one back. It will be fine. They don't really seem to go over the top. They don't really seem to boil over. So even in this game, when they're not creating a ton, when they look, if not second best, then like not at up to the races that Nottingham Forest are at, they still get the goals, and it's still Guardiola with a good header off of a Kevin De Bruyne ball, and then it's Erling Haaland just doing Erling Haaland things, subbing in, and then 9 minutes later getting a goal and just being really, really good, really smart. I say that in response to, you know, the Roy Keane, he's not even like a League Two player. You watch his goal, it's a good ball in by De Bruyne, it's Haaland making a smart little run, but it's him also being so good on the ball that he is just watching the defender's feet, and as soon as there is an overcommitment, he knows exactly where he wants to go and then exactly how to finish. He sets himself up perfectly with one touch to finish with the second. And you can see right there why he is still very much the favorite to win the Golden Boot, though Alexander Isak does close the gap a little bit, but not enough, I think. Haaland, I still think, will be the Golden Boot winner, especially if he's not starting and then in 9 minutes scoring a goal. That's probably a good conversion rate for him.
That's not bad, I would suggest, yeah. And Nottingham Forest not getting any disadvantage from the Luton Ultras in the VAR box for this one, of course. But they are 1 point ahead of Luton in the table at the moment. They are in 17th position, so precariously balanced above the relegation zone with 3 games to play.
Yeah. It's weird to have a relegation battle that isn't quite a battle at all, because Everton and Brentford had their draw. They're both safe. And so then that leaves us with like a very tight race at the bottom of the table, but it's basically 2 spots for 3 teams. It's sort of confusing to me how it can be an interesting run-in while only really one team is staying up and 2 are going down.
Weird that Brentford, they lost 1-0 to Everton, but they got safety via losing in this game.
Yes.
Which I'm calling it El Safico. Can I make that stick?
That's fair. Yes, sorry, I forgot to write down the score. Congrats to both of them for staying up, especially Everton and Sean Dyche, for some of the hurdles they've had to overcome this season. But yeah, about Brentford, they're definitely felt to be a like, yeah, we didn't want to lose this one, but yeah, we're the flip-flops. We're going to get them on before anybody else can. Yeah, that sort of vibe to this game.
Exactly. Arguably, Sheffield United might have been playing in flip-flops since late September, which is when they first entered the bottom three, Taylor, or they were in it since that point, I should say. 5-1 loss at Newcastle United this weekend, relegating the Blades. They actually dropped in late September into the bottom three when they lost 8-0 to Newcastle, if you remember that one at Bramall Lane, which seems like a lifetime ago, but hey, it was earlier this season. They've conceded 97 goals in 35 games.
That's a lot.
Only Swindon Town, when it was a 46-game league, were worse than that in terms of conceding goals. Yikes.
And this game, I think, was a good representation of their season, because they started strong. They started fine. They were up for it. They were getting chances. They were causing Newcastle problems, never mind the fact that they go up 1-0 in the 5th minute. And for a moment, it felt like, where has this team been? Where has this fight been? Where has this belief been? And then Newcastle find a way back in via Alexander Isak, and then the doors are just open from there. And it's a flurry of goals in the second half. It's, I want to say, 4 goals in like 18 minutes or something like that, that tears the doors off of this one. But for Sheffield to go from looking at times like a composed, organized, smart team that know when to attack and when to sit off, for it to fall apart so quickly as soon as they come under pressure, as soon as Newcastle equalized, I think right there was when you could see what this season has been. That no matter how good you are, when it's the Mike Tyson quote, when you get punched in the face, if you're Sheffield United and you get punched in the face and you're immediately like, do you want to score 5 goals? That's fine. We don't know what else to do. I don't think that's a recipe for Premier League security, put it that way.
Yeah, did Sheffield United took the early lead in this one, did they not? So maybe if games were only 5 minutes long, they would have been fine. But alas, they're not.
Gianni Infantino's listening. He's working on it.
Man United 1, Burnley 1. Another late Man United capitulation, Taylor. There's 4 draws Man United have had in the last 5 games, if you count the Coventry draw, which I do. And Antony scored a goal, it says in my notes. And Antony scored a goal in a game.
I don't know what's happening anymore. We have had plenty of people note that we spend an inordinate amount of time on Manchester United, given where they are in the table. Obviously, it relates to my being a Manchester United supporter. I will try not to go long. I will just say that if I'm saying the Sheffield United result was their season in a nutshell, this was very much the same for Manchester United. Don't look particularly good. Don't look particularly capable of creating a ton. Still end up getting a lead via an unexpected player, in this case Antony, with a very good finish off of a good read. He intercepts the ball, he drives forward, he finishes while falling over. Lovely goal. But then United go right back the other way, give up an equalizer, and from there are really hanging on at times. Like, do not look very comfortable, do not look confident, look like they are incapable of handling a Burnley team that are going at them, trying to make something happen, trying to get something. And whereas we see with other teams, that leads to, like when Spurs overcommit, Arsenal punish them. With Manchester United, it's just kind of flailing at the ball, trying to make something happen. You get the Amdouni penalty late to make it 1-1. And from that moment on, there's like half clearances, half kicks, scrambled defending. It's just not a ton of organization and planning on display for Manchester United, who, lest we forget, were the home team in this one. So at Old Trafford, they're hanging on against Burnley.
They were indeed. And surely Erik ten Hag's reign is over, Taylor. I saw a Reddit thread where it mentioned after 34 games in David Moyes' last season, he had 57 points and plus 16 goal difference. He was obviously fired then. Erik ten Hag has 54 points, 3 points fewer, and plus one goal difference. 15 fewer there, and has obviously spent an awful lot of money as well. I believe the threshold for the last few managers has been not quite qualifying for the Champions League the following season, and that threshold has passed. So
it has. It has. I think the only difference is the Ineos partial takeover, that I think they don't want to be perceived as being rash, making rash decisions. I think they're not going to have their hand forced, but I can't imagine they've come away from this season thinking, this is the guy. This is the dude who no doubt is going to figure it out. He's had a ton to deal with. I think I saw something that like in their 34 games, they haven't had an actual left back in like 26 of them, which speaks to recruitment and questionable decisions like sending Sergio Reguilón back on loan in January when you do not have any other left backs and you expect to and then you don't. Questions for the physios, questions for the front office, but certainly questions for Erik ten Hag as well. Ones that I think Ineos will be happy for someone else to get to answer in the offseason.
Yeah, they're making a wonderful SUV though, Taylor. I think we sent around our Slack channel. They've made like a Land Rover Defender style amazing.
I hate how much I liked it.
It's a Homer Simpson car, Taylor, because maybe it won't do what it's supposed to do. I don't know. We'll see.
At this point with the Cybertruck, I don't trust anything that feels like, yeah, we're going to make this thing. It's going to be awesome. You should totally buy it. Don't ask questions. Yeah.
I saw a Cybertruck yesterday in the wild for the first time, Taylor.
Break down when you looked at it too? Like, when you looked at it wrong and it just stopped working?
Yeah. It looks ridiculous. It looks so incongruous. The only thing I can think of, it's got so many sharp angles. If they're in a pedestrian collision, that's bad news.
Yeah. Except that from my understanding of the Cybertruck, it would all just like a gust of wind and the sides fall off. So who knows? I'm sure Elon Musk is going to sue me for this one. It does look a bit, I've seen it once. It looks like a bulkier DeLorean, kind of. Mm-hmm. It has those same angles, that same coloring. I don't know, man. Not for me, Ryan. Not for me.
Yeah, I'm not on the Cybertruck train either. We digress, Taylor. Let's congratulate Bournemouth, shall we, for a 3-0 win over Brighton that gives them their highest ever top flight points tally. 48. Doesn't feel like a high tally, but there we are.
Tyler Adams didn't play, don't care.
There we go. Brighton have only just won 6 of their last 28 league games as well. They're in a bit of a dip at the moment. Goal of the weekend for me, Taylor, came in Fulham's 1-1 draw against Crystal Palace. Jeffrey Schlupp's late equaliser. Did you see this one? It hit at about 300 miles an hour from outside the box. Look it up if you haven't seen it. And it got me thinking. It was an outside of the box shot. So if Jeffrey Schlupp tries to bend in two shots from the edge of the box in a game, is that two curls, one Schlupp?
I'm silently laughing and applauding and also vomiting at the same time. Thank you for that, Ryan. Thank you.
I try. That took me longer than it should have last night when I was thinking about that.
Thank you for not putting it in the intro, at least.
Congratulations also to Leicester, Taylor. They're promoted back to the Premier League from the Championship after second place Leeds lost 4-0 at QPR. That was an unexpected result in the Championship on Friday. Leicester, you remember how they won the Premier League without kicking a ball? They gone done got promoted without kicking a ball as well. So congratulations to them. And Ipswich, who were held 3-3 by Hull on Saturday, they were looking to join Leicester. They'll have to wait a little bit longer to do so. But yeah, Leicester coming back. Yeah. Fox is returning.
Woo. A lot of familiar names in that Leicester team. I'm glad you brought this up because I spend way too much time looking at the championship table and who has done what and where teams are and who has overperformed or underperformed. And Leicester have enough, I think, of the like Premier League quality remaining, obviously, to get back up, but also I think to be in a good position when they're back in the league. I mean, still heavily reliant on Jamie Vardy, so maybe a thing that they will need to play around with because he's, what, 37, 38 at this point? He is not a youngster, but still scoring 16 goals on the season, getting some assists as well. A very strong campaign for him, a very strong campaign for Leicester. I'm excited to have them back. It would be interesting if we get Leicester and Leeds back in. They are still second, as you said, but have played a game more than Ipswich. So if Ipswich get a point, they will leapfrog Leeds. Then we've got, Southampton, Norwich, West Brom, and Hull City, your most likely contenders for the playoffs. It's an interesting time of the championship with a lot of Americans involved or theoretically involved. So let's keep it going, but congratulations to Leicester.
Congrats indeed, Tay-Tay. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go around the rest of Europe, then look at MLS, then we're going to get out of here. Back shortly.
Hey, folks, this is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to a weekend review. Let's turn our attention, Taylor, to Italy, where we were all excited about what Serie A was branding the Derby d'America, Juventus against Milan. Obviously, potentially four USMNT players being involved in this one, and they all were in the end for various lengths of time.
And that's what made it such a compelling and interesting game.
Yeah, 0-0. did anything of note happen? I don't think so.
Juve had some chances, didn't take them. Milan had fewer chances, also didn't take them. And then the Americans all huddled up and chatted at the end of the game, and that was my highlight of the game.
Yeah, so let's not spend too much time on that one. I mean, Pioli would be happy, not his first choice defense in this one, so to get a clean sheet for them at least was a decent effort, but very, very Allegri-esque performance.
Yes.
From both teams, arguably.
And I think in the intro I was saying that it feels like the Premier League has the most stuff still going on, even if you, at this point, likely only have two teams competing for the title, but there's Champions League places and just like the relegation battle we talked about, but even just managerial drama. In this one, this is kind of like what I'm talking about in reverse, where it's Milan-Juve, it's second versus third, but it also feels like, for what purpose? Like, they're both going to be in the Champions League. Neither one's going to win the title. There's Americans involved, so that's cool. That was definitely what I was paying attention to. I found Roma-Napoli a little bit more fascinating, given that I continue to be impressed by the work Daniele De Rossi has done. Many, many people out there saying that he is probably the manager of the season. I don't know if you've
many
heard
that,
Many
people talking about that, yes.
Yes, many people are saying. But I think there is This is a good argument for his candidacy. Just gonna say, because Dybala puts Roma up in this in the second half with a penalty, then Napoli equalize and then go ahead with a penalty of their own in the 84th, and then Roma respond and make changes and get a late equalizer courtesy of Tammy Abraham, English legend Tammy Abraham playing for
my brother's
Lukaku.
Neighborhood's Tammy Abraham, yes.
Oh yes, of course, of course, of course. But Abraham playing because Lukaku is out for the season, so De Rossi still finding ways to get results despite being shorthanded. Many people are saying, Ryan, and I understand why.
Yeah, that's very true. We could dig into that as well at some point, I'm sure. Tammy Abraham's first goal since April 28th last year, so almost... Oh, well, that is a year, isn't it?
That is a year.
Congratulations to him. The 2-2 draw that Daniel De Rossi and Daniel De Rossi alone earned.
Correct.
At the Stadio Armando Maradona.
That's what people are saying.
Taylor, Bologna got a 1-1 draw at home to Udinese.
No.
Talking of legendary coaches, you saw that Fabio Cannavaro has taken the reins of Udinese for these last few games.
My silence indicates that I had not seen that.
Yeah. And, well, he played the 18 minutes against Roma that they replayed after Indica collapsed, and they replayed them midweek. So that was Cannavaro's first few minutes in charge of Udinese. He got his first full game here. A very respectable draw against Bologna, who are obviously going for Champions League spots as well. They're in fourth at the moment. They could overtake Juventus. They dropped 2 points here, though. Udinese, 2 points shy of safety in the relegation zone. They've got four games to be rescued by little old Fabio Cannavaro, who's... experience in Serie A or in Italy is similar to that of Daniel De Rossi, and it was just something in the lower league that was eventually got the team relegated. But he's obviously got experience in Asia as well.
Interesting. Yeah, Bologna in fourth, as you said, just behind Juve. Roma in fifth now, and Italy gets the five Champions League spots next year. So we could see all of them in there, though Atalanta have a game in hand. Lazio could still close that gap. Who knows? Interesting times in Serie A. Somewhat interesting times.
Yep. Also in the Champions League next season, Taylor, will be Inter, of course. They had a 2-0 win at Torino, which was basically just a party. So they rescheduled this game and their celebrations for this Sunday. So they moved both of them so they could sort of have the game, win it, and then go into the Duomo and be crazy. There are images from the Piazza Duomo, which is like the main square in Milan with the cathedral there. It looks very impressive. There was something like 400,000 people there. It looked incredible. In the game, by the way, history was made as the league's first all-female refereeing team were in charge at the San Siro. So that was excellent to see. What was interesting to see, Taylor, at the celebrations, I don't know if you caught this, Denzel Dumfries. Did you see the poster of him holding up an image of Theo Hernandez on a leash being dog walked during the celebrations?
It made me uncomfortable and also sort of like gleeful for what that's going to lead to down the road. Yeah, that was brutal and hilarious all at once.
Yes, it was indeed. Congrats again to Inter for that long time coming 20th Scudetto. Let's go to Spain.
How angry would Graham be if we produced something similar of like you like owning the show in his absence, Ryan? When he comes back, I think you have the Photoshop skills to make that happen.
You presume I own it just in his absence, Taylor? I'm very naive. Let's go to Spain, shall we, Taylor? Real Madrid on last Friday had a 1-0 win over Real Sociedad. Barcelona hosts Valencia today as we record. Real Madrid are 13 points ahead of Girona in the title race. They've got five games to play, so they could, if my math is correct, win it with their game next week when Girona host Barcelona. So Barcelona can help Real Madrid win the league if they beat Girona, if that makes sense.
That's nice of them.
Got a home game against Cadiz next
week. And then is that a week that Xavi will be staying or leaving?
I think it depends what side the coin lands on, because that's how the way it goes at the moment. Little old Mr. Backtrack, Xavi,
I cannot believe that that's where we are. After when Xavi Alonso came out and said, I am staying next season, I remember Joe sort of being like, it would be a big deal if that ended up not being the case. And we were all sort of like, no, he's definitely, like, if once you've announced you are staying in that fashion, that categorically, you're staying. And when Xavi last week comes out and is basically like, after the Champions League elimination comes out, and it's like, no, I am done. I am out of here. That felt pretty categorical. And yet here we are, like a week and a half later. He's still around. Interesting times. I'm going to say interesting in the way that my wife says interesting for how the situation is at Barcelona.
I think the way your wife says interesting is, you know how Larry David says, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's that. It was an interesting choice you made. Okay. Like, oh no.
Okay. It's like that, yeah. One unfortunate incident to make note of in Atletico Madrid's 3-1 win over Athletic Bilbao, the Franco can only permanently change one of our names derby. Nico Williams scoring in the 3-1 win there, but accusing a section of the home fans of racially abusing him, unfortunately. The game was paused to make an announcement in the stadium at Atletico Madrid to the crowd, and Antoine Griezmann and Jose Maria Jimenez apparently appearing to urge the fans to stop chanting before play was resumed. So very unfortunate scenes there. We do not like to see that. However, Taylor, in Germany, what we do like to see is Bayer Leverkusen doing it again. A 2-2 draw against Stuttgart, coming back from 2-0 down, scoring another late equaliser. The mentality at this club right now, incredible stuff, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And this was a game where Stuttgart looked excellent. They pressed effectively. They caused Leverkusen problems consistently. They were happy for it to get physical when the situation required. And they were clinical. They took their chances really well, Stuttgart. They get that 2-0 lead. It felt like, okay, this is it. This is going to be too much for Leverkusen. Stuttgart are just playing so well. And then Leverkusen found another gear. And they get a great goal to kind of put them back into it. It's really, really well taken from a tight angle and just nestles perfectly into like the far side netting by Yassin Adli. And then in the end, it's Andrik with the kind of volley off of a chaos in the box moment. But the thing that stood out to me about Bayer Leverkusen, I mentioned this earlier, they're another team that just, they don't look anxious. They don't look nervous. They don't look chaotic. They never look panicked. They certainly up the tempo. They're frantically trying to get the ball back into play. They're taking quick corners as quickly as they can, throw-ins as quickly as they can. But there's not a desperation to it. There's not, like, the Spurs game ends. I think the final kick is Son, like, or one of the final kicks is Son, like, massively overhitting a cross that goes out for a goal kick. And it just sort of deflates the atmosphere right there. I don't think of those moments as happening with Leverkusen. It feels like they just keep grinding. They keep backing themselves. They're patient in a way that even when there's only 20 seconds left on the clock in injury time, they're still moving the ball deliberately, sometimes towards goal, sometimes away from goal, sometimes laterally. But there's not a panic. There is a speed to it. And I think that just is so fascinating that even 2-0 down, it feeling like this is finally going to be the one that's too much for them, they find a way back into it and make things happen. And I think that stood out all the more because I watched this one and then watched Dortmund. And my goodness, Dortmund. Not a great weekend for them. They go up 1-0 from Jadon Sancho. And then they lose 4-1 from RB Leipzig, courtesy of RB Leipzig, who then hold on to fourth spot in the Bundesliga. And now with, what, 3 games remaining, Dortmund 5 points behind Leipzig for that final Champions League place. Dortmund's still alive in the Champions League. But it feels like another Dortmund performance in which they can score, but they can't really keep a clean sheet. They have defensive issues. If you spread them out and get them stretched, there will be holes, there will be opportunities. And Leipzig just kept finding ways through and were pretty relentless when they did, pretty ruthless when they did. So very worrying times again if you're a Dortmund supporter, less so if you're a Leipzig fan or a Leverkusen supporter.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a big one in the race for fourth place. Jadon Sancho's goal was lovely, though. I will say that that much. Stuttgart in third, who can secure Champions League soccer next week, I believe, once again, if Ryan's math is correct. Just to jump back to Leverkusen one more time, Taylor. They've scored 16 times after the 90-minute mark this season. Oof. Alex Ferguson's for Man United, eat your heart out. That is incredible. Also, just to note that they face Roma in the Europa League semifinals this coming Thursday. Manager of the Year derby.
Oh, boy. I think I know who my money is on in that one, and it's maybe the guy in
Roma, right?
Yes, of course. Leverkusen do have a little bit of a tough time ahead of them, but I think they should be just fine. I think they're going to win the title, Ryan. Controversial, I know, but I think they will probably win the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and maybe even the Europa League. I mean, it feels like the winner of the Europa League is coming from this tie, so we shall see. One more German game to mention. Bayern with a 2-1 win over Eintracht Frankfurt. Harry Kane! The real one, not the Kai Havertz one, with a brace in this one. He scored 42 goals in all competitions in his debut campaign in Germany. That beats his previous season top scoring of 41 goals for Tottenham in 2017-18. So he's also now scored 400 goals for club and country. Harry Kane, he good at the soccer. There we go.
Harry Kane scoring a bunch of goals for a team that didn't win silverware. How How foreign for him. What an odd situation. I'm sorry, Tottenham fans. It was not a fun weekend. I shouldn't pile on, but I will in this moment.
There you go. Just piling on, Taylor.
Ryan made me do it. This is what happens when it's just me and Ryan.
It is. Sorry about that. Only a couple more things to discuss on this show, Tay-Tay. Should we take a quick look over to Major League Soccer?
Sure.
Big crowds are following Leo Messi. He went to Gillette Stadium. I'm not going to do the Boston accent again, but there were over 65,000 people in attendance for Miami's 4-1 win. Messi getting a brace in this one. I love that Miami tweeted or X'd that he has 16 goal contributions this season. He's the first MLS player in history to score 16 contributions in his first 7 games of a season. That is quite a stat to get that framed, I think, frankly.
Oh, I'm sure he will. It's probably the career highlight for him. This was a great game from him as well, with the home crowd very much pulling in his favor, and thus, I guess, Miami's favor. I did see some reports that the Revs were pumping in some crowd noise or playing some crowd noise to maybe try to kind of rest that atmosphere back. I think it's a thing that they do for lineups and at certain moments in the game to kind of just give it a little oomph. They got that really quickly with the Chankalai goal in the first minute. And then Inter-Miami did Inter-Miami things, and then Luis Suarez just sort of gets his celebratory goal that he seems to get every single game at this point. Miami quite good, Messi quite good. You heard it here first.
Yes, breaking news here. Real Salt Lake atop of the West. They got a 2-1 win at Philly. Sounded like a feisty one between LAFC and Portland. A 3-2 win for Los Angeles there. Phil Neville's Portland. I love saying that. Dennis Bwanga with the 92nd minute winner in that very dramatic. 8 yellows and a red in that game. I'm sure we'll hear plenty more about that and many other MLS games on the feed a little later in the week. Taylor, any more Major League Soccer to...
Just wanted to note, because we'll end up talking about it tomorrow, the DC results, the win over Seattle, is confounding to me, because it's DC getting a win. That's good. A brace for Christian Benteke in that one. But it's once again Seattle struggling, and they get a red card. Stephen Fry is sent off in this one, hence the penalty. But for Seattle, it just continues to be not clicking, and we've talked about this many times on the show that it's injuries and it's trying to find the right combination, and then it's Pedro de la Vega getting injured at the wrong time, and how do you replace him, and where do certain players go? But at this point in the season, we are rapidly approaching a time when they need to have answers, and you can be bad for a while in Major League Soccer and still make the playoffs for sure, but to have 6 points from your first 9 games, we are not yet at the Matt Doyle 10-game we can properly evaluate this team level, but we're one game away, and I feel like only 10 goals, only 11 conceded, I guess that's positive, but it has not been a good start to the season for Seattle, and I am very interested to find out what needs to change or what can change to get them back into the spots that we expect them to be in. But right now, it does not seem fairly optimistic. For DC, they get the win. That makes me happy. Life is good for now, sort of. They're in the playoff spots. Again, low bar, but here we are. I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't think Charlotte FC played this weekend, so let's just skip over that one. I'm sure they weren't in New York or anything.
Yeah, like no, we're fine. Happened.
All good, no worries. All good. One more game to discuss, or one more incident to discuss. Paris Saint-Germain winning the title, Taylor. Can you believe it? PSG, their third consecutive Ligue 1 title after second place Monaco fell to a 3-2 defeat against Lyon. Congrats. 10th title in the past.
Lucky underdogs.
Years. Incredible. Incredible stuff for them.
Who'd
have
thunk? I mean, credit to Luis Enrique. I think it's been a tricky season. We've seen other managers at PSG with the resources and the talent not win. So there is precedent for things going really poorly. And I think for him to navigate the Mbappe saga such as it's been has been commendable. And I think he has made this PSG team look like a team and play like a team. And the results have borne that out. I think they will continue to improve. I'm guessing they'll spend some money in the summer and will be once again targeting the Champions League next year. But credit to them. Congratulations, I suppose.
All right, Taylor, that pretty much wraps up the weekend review, unless you have any more games to discuss, but I think we've weekend reviewed. Let's say thank you very much to Taylor Rockwell then.
Thank you very much to Taylor Rockwell then.
And thank you very much to Ryan Bailey. We'll be back on the feed very shortly, listener. Thank you very much for joining us on this one. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show if you would like to support our endeavors. Thank you very much to everyone who does so. But for now, bye!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.